Hi, Karen Smith here, and welcome to Module 4, Lesson 16. Now, this lesson I wanted to make somewhat of a transition, a pause between the in-breathing and out-breathing, so to speak. The pause here is intended to take a little bit of time to get some additional perspective on what we're doing here. Now, of course, your main reason for being here is to get the specialized knowledge that you need to be effective, and I believe you are already experiencing a significant difference in your understanding and perspective and confidence about your knowledge of the United Nations. But beyond that, another reason, or perhaps more of an underpinning reason, is to upgrade your capacity and performance as a leader. Now, the word leader is overused and at the same time often little understood. Yet it's a word and a concept that almost every single person responds to naturally. Now, why is that? Why do most people somehow perk up or take interest in some part of their minds and hearts to the idea of being a leader or to leaders? And it's this almost global response to that word that also deserves the attention. Now, in this course, which is the advocacy algorithm, we're really focusing on all of the information that you need to know, the approaches, the understanding of advocacy itself, and we'll get into that more later on, in the United Nations context, that will enable you to be more effective in advocacy at the United Nations. However, it is integrally reliant upon personal leadership. While I can't deal with some of these elements in depth here, leadership overlaps many of the areas of advocacy. And in this lesson, I want to leave you with at least a few little tools and techniques that will help you be more effective as a person in your PR and advocacy work. So back to leadership and its global nature for a moment. And this connects with one very fundamental belief and perspective of mine, that the very nature of being human is that we, you and I, are destined to be leaders. Now, some of you are going to say, how on earth can I say that? How can everybody be a leader? Where are all the followers? Well, I completely understand your mind reacting like that, but just stay with me for a little on this. Now, some may end up leaders of small teams. Others may lead institutions and be called directors or presidents or CEOs. There are others that will remain leaders in their communities. Others will be leaders in their families, and they will take on the tasks and responsibilities of parents, of elder brothers or sisters, of grandparents, of even great-grandparents, of the matriarch or the patriarch, the rebel or the economic leader or the artistic leader. And, of course, some may end up leaders of nations. So right there, I'm trying to underscore that leadership is evident at every level of society, something that is very and fundamental in human life and experience. And while the external trappings of leadership may change and vary wildly, you and I are destined to be leaders and are the one and only leader of a very specific entity, your life. And that makes our leadership capacities of absolute importance, at least to ourselves and those who are close to us, our loved ones, those within our sphere of influence. So the point that I've made thus far is that we all lead. Socially, we recognize leaders of families, organizations, institutions, nations, in politics, in the area of economy, academics, religions. So we recognize socially many different kinds of leaders. But in fact, each individual is the captain of their own ship, is the leader of their life. You are the one who navigates the string of organizations, groups, individuals, relationships, and decision points that make up your life. And very definitely, you, as central to any advocacy work that you do, enormously shape the outcomes. Now, while the work of this program is not to go into organizational issues of your NGO, suffice to say that your NGO's goals, objectives, and its own culture and rules of engagement enormously affect your work as its advocate. But what I want to do here is to focus on a few steps that you can take to improve your competency as an advocate. Now, these are not steps that require extra tools or training or any kind of resources. Rather, what they do require is a certain state of mind or awareness or focus or commitment. But before I get into these three steps, I want to finish explaining a couple of assumptions, which I hope you will additionally consider as not only as we go through them, but perhaps later on. The first of all I've already mentioned is that we, in fact, all lead, and at least our own lives. But in fact, we do lead or have the opportunity to initiate change in many small groups, medium-sized groups, larger groups, and from many different places, even without the title of leader. Here, I'm not going to go into all of the leadership issues. I'm still going to focus on just one particular area, and I'll get to that shortly. The second point that I want to make here is that, in fact, our reality is constructed through our relationships. In other words, we do not exist or have any kind of memory or experiences in the world other than those in relationship with objects, with food, with structures, with physical items, with conceptual items, with families, with friends, with individuals, with groups of individuals. But whatever it is that we are relating to by whatever means, our reality is nevertheless constructed through those relationships. Next, the point I want to address here, and this will become the major focus of the rest of this short pause for perspective, is that our beliefs profoundly shape our experience in each relationship we have and the meaning we give them. In other words, we do not come to a relationship, to a person, to a moment, completely tabula rasa, no background, no base experience, no perspective, no angle. Even physiologically, when we approach another person, we approach them from a certain position. We may be approaching them because we are taller and therefore we look down on them. We may be smaller than them and therefore we look up. We may be coming up from behind them or from in front or alongside them. Even at that level, what we think about how we look down, how we look up, what it means to approach somebody from behind or from in front, or to extend a hand, or to bow, or whatever it might mean. The belief about our movements, about our position, about who they are, profoundly affects not just the tactile experiences in that moment, the perceptual, physiologically perceptual experiences, but through the meaning that we have given all of those elements that we engage in that relationship, that experience is profoundly shaped. The implications are for advocacy that beliefs can both undermine our best efforts to achieve our goals or help us grow our success. Beliefs can either help or hinder. Now, what I want to do for the rest of this time is to go into some of the 8 toxic and 8 helpful beliefs. Now, here I'm not talking about absolute beliefs about God, God's existence, the beginning of the world, the end of the world, any of the big issues. I'm talking about your functioning and your engagement as an individual, potentially going into an intergovernmental environment. We'll look at the beliefs that will undermine you, the beliefs that will strengthen and give you the best chance of succeeding in that environment. perhaps at the end if we have time, but I suspect that that will be in another segment, that we will look at some very simple actions that you can take, questions that you can ask that will enable you to shift when you think you might be stuck. So during this lesson, what we're going to do is we're going to focus on this area, actually just one aspect of this area of optimal thinking that will ensure that you move from where you are now, or where you began prior to this training, to being able to achieve your goals for your NGO at the United Nations. I just want to look a little bit at some of the inside elements that will enable you to actually get there. Just because, as you know, and we're coming up to the new year, just because you want to be able to achieve a goal and you feel like you've got a goal in mind and it's a worthy goal, it's a significant goal, it's a goal that you feel passionate about. But how many times have you set up New Year's resolutions and you feel the same way about those goals? But somewhere between where you are at the time you make those resolutions and the achievement of your goals, something is missing and you never quite get there. So what we're doing here is just looking at one of those elements. And again, this particular course is not geared towards going into this kind of depth. But I do want to leave you with a few tidbits from one of my reports on change making. This will give you a few ideas, a few tools, and a glimpse of the kind of thinking, the kind of elements in your thinking that you do need to attend to be effective in the achievement of your goals. And what we're looking at here is the optimal thinking. Part of that thinking is to what will get you there. It needs to be accurate, it needs to be clean, it needs to be focused, and it needs to be correct for your goals. We're going to look at here is some of the, what I'm calling the clean elements, addressing the beliefs that are toxic, that are messing you up, that will create inaccurate assumptions that undermine your success. So let's get on with it. Pivotal beliefs that undermine effectiveness and those that grow our competence. Now, one, you know, stepping out into the United Nations environment, some people may not feel confident or competent, not smart enough, not like they know enough. And I assure you, the very first day, especially after I sat through my first briefing, DPI briefing, Department of Public Information briefing, I think I may have said it before, but I sat in that meeting room. English is my first language. I sat in there, and most of the time, I didn't have the foggiest what anybody was talking about. I understood the individual words. I had no idea what the paragraphs meant. Did I feel confident? Did I feel smart enough? In that moment, no, I didn't. But if I had held firmly under the belief that I was not smart enough, then I would have been in real trouble. The belief that can totally unmask the toxic nature of that first one is that the reality is anyone can succeed in the United Nations environment with the right mindset and skills. You don't have to be a graduate student. You don't have to have been trained in political science or international relations. So long as you are willing to put in the time and the effort and to get the right mindset and the basic skills, if you're willing to put that effort in, absolutely. How do I know this absolutely? Well, I've trained individuals, some of whom didn't have undergraduate degrees and could barely speak English. What I had to do was to make sure that they developed the right mindset and the right skill set. Then they could work very effectively, and some of them continue to do so at the United Nations today. Number two, another belief. Well, nobody knows our organization at the United Nations yet. They don't respect us. They don't know what we do. So I can't expect to make any kind of a difference until they recognize that we're good, significant, and have great projects and programs. The counter to that is that your NGO will not get recognized until you start and make a difference, not only in the local areas that you are already active, but at the United Nations, the very reason why you're going there. In other words, it is you making the difference by standing up by putting yourself out there, by taking initiative, that your NGO will be recognized. After all, who else is going to enable the NGO to be noticed other than its representatives? Next debilitating belief. I need to make an impact fast, but working with people is so slow. More accurate belief. In fact, you start to impact the UN community immediately with small, intentional acts. Now, you may not believe all of these debilitating beliefs all the time, but become more aware of your self-talk that sounds like any of these beliefs, because flawed beliefs cause faulty assumptions, and faulty assumptions, frankly, undermine your competence. Another flawed belief. My NGO can't afford to have extra staff, and we really need more people, more resources, more information, better books, better materials to be effective. A more accurate belief is significant change is always spearheaded by a small group of people, and they don't necessarily have the most resources. They will, however, be the most resourceful. Thinking that you need to wait until the day you get the resources you would like is not the type of thinking that grows your team's impact nor accomplishes its mission. Next. I have too many things to do to really get the NGO structured and organized. And that could apply to get myself organized and in good shape. More accurate and useful thinking is focus and strategic leverage is what moves mountains, not having more time. In other words, by taking a little bit of time to focus on strategic decisions that leverage the resources that we do have is what will make the biggest difference. Not that we have to do everything, nor that we have to have so much more time to do it all. Another damaging false belief filter. I'll think about developing organizational strategies after I've made my basic plan and I've made my contacts and I've got people that I'm connected with at the United Nations. More accurately, you will make a better strategic plan and choices when you are clear about your objectives, your plan and your resources and your time frame. In other words, your preparation time up front will enable you to be far more effective and strategic. And lastly, someday someone will realize how important our work is and just hand us over the reins. Now, how many people are in fact looking for the opportunity to be found, to be discovered, to get funds, to get recognized,
to be appreciated?
How many of us spend too many times in that little quadrant of our lives? Waiting.
As if we need permission from somebody else to get out there and do what we know we need to do.
The counter to that is, I'll only succeed with the right thinking, the right focus, and by making and doing the right actions. It's not by waiting for another to act
that we can make a difference and change things in our part of the world. We succeed as we pursue the right thinking, the right focus, and taking the right actions. Now, if I were to sum up all of these 8 pivotal beliefs that undermine our effectiveness, I would have to distill them down into one biggest little lie of them all. And that is that small, intentional, and creative acts are somehow not enough. But as we do continue to make small intentional acts that are creative, that are targeted toward a wholesome goal, then absolutely we are on the road to significant change, and you will be helping pull your NGO and its mission along that path of significant change. So again, I bring these pivotal beliefs to your attention so that you can become more aware of your own self-talk, what you are telling yourself, whether you are undermining your own effectiveness or whether you are growing your own competencies. And that you can begin to see more clearly if you're not already doing this on a very conscious level. When you catch yourself thinking something that is undermining, you can shift and take up an alternate thought that is, in fact, more accurate and that is more helpful to your stated goals. Remember, anyone can succeed with the right mindset and the skills. Your NGO will be recognized when you start making a difference. You don't need to wait until somebody recognizes your NGO. You can start to impact the United Nations community immediately with small intentional acts, because in fact it's the small intentional acts that make the impossible possible. Perhaps more on that later. Significant change is always spearheaded by a small group. You don't have to have large and huge resources. It depends on your ability to be resourceful, not on what resources you have available to you. Focus and strategic leverage is what moves mountains, not just having a whole lot more time or doing a whole lot more, many more things. You'll make better strategic choices when you are clear on your objectives, your plans, your resources, and your time frame. And if those choices, objectives, and plan need to be made together in your group, then that's what needs to be done first. And the last one again, I'll only succeed with the right thinking, the right focus, and by making the right actions. I don't succeed by hoping, waiting, believing that somebody else will come along to create a more optimal environment in which to act. Now, I just realized that, in fact, I've actually only given you 7 pivotal beliefs. Now, there are more than these 8, and I'll go into the 8th one just very shortly. But more than enunciating all of the beliefs that need to be checked is that I wanted to introduce you to the habit of evaluating your assumptions, that is, the beliefs that underpin your decisions, your choices, and your behaviors. Now, here I'm not going to look at these in terms of their morality of right and wrong, but I want you to evaluate them because most of these are not ultimate moral rights or wrongs. It's more the question, does this belief help you reach your goal, or does it in some way incapacitate you, undermine your effectiveness in your work? So let's get on to this 8th one before we go any further. More is always better than less. Burger King, McDonald's, almost all of America is built somehow on the common perception that more is simply better than less. But this is not always true. It can be, but it is not an across-the-board blanket truth. And in the context of your pursuing your goals, you need to really look at, is more better than less? The belief or the assumption that is perhaps better at growing your competencies is that less is more because it encourages you to focus, to produce, and to be effective. Of course, you can't take less to the extreme of having nothing, but to be always operating and waiting for the right moment when we've got more resources, more money, more people, more available to us, more better opportunity, more time, whatever, that undermines your ability to act well. If instead you take on the fundamental assumption and belief that, hey, less is more because that way I'm focused, and then you get yourself focused, I will produce with what I do have and I will be effective with the limited resources that I have, then in fact your competency, your ability is growing profoundly. Then of course, when there is more, you will be able to do more. But if instead you're waiting for more, waiting for the right moment, believing that you cannot act until you get more, then you will be incapacitated by that belief. And in that way, that belief is toxic to you. So here we are at the end of this lesson. And here we've been mostly focusing on what's going on inside you. Now, today's homework. I want to continue this. I wanted to make the point of having you take the time to look inside, to question your own thinking, to check and see what possible toxic or debilitating beliefs and assumptions you may have. Now, they're not that difficult to change, in actual fact. The simple work of, in a sense, taking them out, looking at them, and assessing them, that undermines a certain power that they have over you, the power simply being that you didn't know that they were acting in your day-to-day affairs. So I do want you to be aware of them. I do want you to look at them. I do want you to know that there are disciplines in your thinking, in your questioning of your own processes that can help you move forward and grow your success in your work, in the work of your NGO, in your personal work as a representative of your NGO, and in your advocacy. Now, perhaps you can think of at least one other belief that you have that you know is not quite right, but it keeps popping up. Now, I want you to analyze it. Try to see what the opposite of that belief is and see how that might be true, especially in light of your goal. And that work of looking at alternatives to your often unquestioned assumptions, how that can liberate you from that assumption's hold, that sometimes toxic beliefs hold on you and how it incapacitates you. Now, again, remember, we're not talking about the big philosophical beliefs here, but the small functional ones. And anyway, if you like, you can also pick up some of your big philosophical beliefs. If in fact they're true and will hold a little under scrutiny, no reason why not to do that yourself. But here I'm addressing the small functional beliefs that we use on a day-to-day basis that are underpinning a lot of our planning, moment-to-moment decisions and actions. And again, we've spent the first three modules really looking at the UN, what's out there, how it's structured, how it works, how these were all aspects of it and they and them. And absolutely important as we encounter the United Nations, as we encounter diplomats, as we encounter other NGO representatives, as we begin to find ways to work with people in those places in the United Nations structure, very critical that we have this specialized knowledge and understanding of the UN itself. Now I want to shift the focus to begin to introduce you as we move on into the advocacy area. But first, this week, we will continue to look at the member states, at the missions, at the people that do the work in the missions, and how to optimally interact with them and what their mindsets are. We're getting to the more people side of things here. I did want you to see that there is a dynamic that is going on and that we are engaged in those dynamics with not just with institutions, structures, organizations and historic facts, with people who have beliefs of their own, big ones and little ones, sometimes false and helpful to them and sometimes not. And we in fact interact with those persons and they are driven by or they respond to many of the same kinds of debilitating and phenomenally inspirational beliefs, just like you. And that's part and parcel of the work that we need to do. So that's today's homework. I want you to continue to observe yourself, not to judge yourself, but to observe and to better understand how you function as you go out to do this work of advocacy, or it might be PR, or it might simply be representing your organization in this environment. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. We've still got a lot more that is exciting, fun, and new ahead of us.